Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
It's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday.
Time for another edition of the Reardon Roundtable. Now, Mark Reardon on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to a Friday Reardon Roundtable as I introduce the panel, because we have plenty to cover in the next 55 minutes or so. Jane Duker, welcome back to this Friday. How are you this afternoon?
Doing awesome. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, all things considered, as we say, former state senators here. John Lamping, how are you, John?
I hear you now.
I lost myself on the Zoom call here a moment ago, so you can hear me. Jeff Smith is here as well. How are you, Jeff?
I'm great. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing okay. And then the call this afternoon, the Zoom call, because we're all on the Zoom, the listeners can't see us, but it's hosted by Andy Reid's Foggy Face Shield. Dave Klein has signed into Zoom with that title, and that's pretty appropriate if you saw the game last night. That was just one bizarre aspect, but let's get to what much of the country is talking about, the show of unity on the field. And this is another one of those things, especially after doing some research into it, that's very nuanced, and we'll explain it here as we move forward. But here's what it sounded like just briefly on the field last night. I thought I heard booing, and this is what it sounded like on the air. Now, there's a new theory about why people may have booed, and I'll get to that in just a second, but here's Andy Reid, the head coach, of course, of the Kansas City Chiefs, the Super Bowl champion. Kansas City Chiefs said this.
Listen, I didn't really notice it. I thought that was kind of a neat deal, just both sides coming together for a cause, the story was told there, and so guys joining hands together for a cause, and so we can all learn from this, and really it's just to make us all better and even a stronger country than we already are. I mean, we have a chance to just be completely unstoppable when all hands join together, and that's a beautiful thing, man.
Yeah, Andy Reid sounded like a coach trying to keep it positive. I tuned in this morning to CBS This Morning, and the panel was reacting. This is what that sounded like.
It's so painful to see people booing when the players are saying we want to support racial injustice.
And they're unified together on the field.
Yes,
this is the team you're rooting
unified
for. They're sending you a message and you're booing it?
I don't get it. Especially when you see what has been happening in this country for the last couple of, really for years, but certainly these last couple of months. That's just so painful to see that anybody would be against people speaking out that they want racial justice and racial equality. I don't understand
it. You can call it scattered boos, but it was certainly loud enough to hear.
Well, I heard it, yeah. Nice. With a reduced crowd.
Okay, well.
With a reduced crowd.
Yeah, so I heard it too, but again, now the question is, why were people booing? And it was a small number of people, but it did resonate. Now, I mentioned some new information here. I've watched a couple of different fan views of this, not through what happened on television, and you don't hear it as much, but you also hear some things from the crowd, and there is an allegation that someone in the crowd shouted something like Trump 2020 or Donald Trump, and that's what some of the fans were booing at. My personal theory is the fans were just like, look, we play the football game, enough with this woke stuff. So, Jane, I'll start with you here. Were they booing the show of unity? I don't think they were.
I don't know. I mean, I think, I don't know. I just think that the fact that they were all standing together, I mean, the commentators you played aggravated me more than what I saw on the football field. You know, if they want to stand together and show unity in any way, shape, or form, we probably need more of that right now. And it's good to see that people are capable of it. You know, but of course now it has to turn into some big scandal about who was booing what, and we'll probably never really know. And so now it's just, you know, it's just seeded more division. And I guess that was not its intended purpose.
Well, I suppose my thing, I'll just tell you what I went through last night. And, you know, I was watching the baseball game. Unfortunately, that turned in a very bad direction after the first game yesterday. But look, I was excited about football. I had a couple of people over at my house to watch football. By the way, a couple of people who are very liberal, not conservative, that only matters when I'm about to tell you. So I kept tuning in to NBC Football Night in America, you know, the pregame. All I saw was stuff about race and stuff about social justice. And I'm sorry. I don't want to see it. Turn back to the Cardinals game. Hey, we got football on yet? Nope. Turn back to the Cardinals game. Hey, is there any chance we're going to do any football, actual football? Nope. Can't get to that. We got to do the show. So finally, I stuck it on there, John. I'll let you kind of get in here. So I think that maybe one theory might be the fans saying, you know, enough already. We paid to get into this game to watch a football game. And we get it. You guys are woke. We understand. Everyone's united. But for the love of God, can we play football?
Amen. Just play the sport. Look, I'm of the theory that we experienced peak sports in 2019, and it's not going to get back there for a long time. And the final numbers aren't in, but I think viewership last night was down about 15%. They had a 5.2 share or something for NFL opening night. And, you know, I think that you've ruined the sports owners of all leagues. They're in the process of ruining something that had been completely apolitical until Kaepernick took a knee during the national anthem and the ratings crashed. And now it's completely political. BLM is it still stenciled on the mound, the Cardinals and Bush Stadium? Because I don't watch the Cardinals anymore. But
no, that was just the one game. I think
they've completely politicized this process, and they need to walk back from it. And now they don't. It's a weird year, so they're not quite sure why viewership's going to be down. And I tell you, when baseball comes back next year, they're not going to draw 3 million people next year. People are pissed off at what these sports teams have done. So, you know, I'm of the opinion, just play the damn sport and stop politicizing this stuff. There's enough politics in life now. It's 24/7, cable news, you know, talk radio everywhere. You know, we want to watch a football game, baseball game, hockey game, a movie, you know, like I know we're going to talk about the Oscars later. I mean, just stop all this craziness.
Well, Jeff, let me, you know, because there's a couple of different theories on the booing, and I like what Jason Whitlock's been doing a lot at OutKick, and he's been one of the guys that's been willing to criticize this movement and call it for what it is. And he said, look, one of the things that happened here probably is the fans aren't dumb. They know what's going on here, and this was a rejection of the rioting, the looting, the violence, the in-your-face harassment associated with BLM. Is there anything to that?
So a rejection of rioting, looting, violence. Colin Kaepernick couldn't kneel because that was offensive. Other people who raised their fists, that was offensive. So instead, the most innocuous possible way of protesting, people just locking arms, saying that we're in this together, and that incites this. I mean, what can you do? Is there any type of expression that's acceptable? I just, that's where I am.
Look, here's what I guess I would say. Sure, there's ample opportunity for expression outside of the football stadium. And I get that we're past that. These guys want to use their platforms. Pat Mahomes said last night, we're not going to let the distraction of football get in the way of changing the world. That's fine. But as a fan, I don't want to let the distraction of all this other stuff get in the way of football. And I have the right to not watch the game if I don't want to. I think John's right that more people are probably going to peel feel away because they're turned off by some of this stuff. And the organizations have to fall in line because they don't want to make the players angry. I think it's a worthy effort. Okay, everybody's together, kumbaya. But what is it actually doing? What is the purpose that it's showing? You have people with Breonna Taylor's name on their helmets. I saw the song last night, and we saw her name on a t-shirt. Jeff, I'll ask you on Breonna Taylor. What is that case in particular about? Is that about police brutality? Is that about race? Is that about something else?
Yeah, I think that case in particular is about something that conservatives, you know, right here in Missouri are pretty sympathetic to. People like Phil Christofanelli or Andrew Koenig, you know, people who think government is too big, too intrusive, too much in our lives, because that case is about no-knock warrants and, you know, police being able to just come into your apartment and shoot. And that's something that people on all sides of the spectrum agree is probably.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with you because, look, I think I've been against no-knock warrants for as long as I can remember. And I think that the thinking people, the people who know the details of the case, Jeff, you clearly do. I'm going to guess the whole panel. Yes, for that, that's what that's about. But let me tell you something. For the people who have her name on their helmet, they don't know anything about this case. And by the way, the shooting of the police started after the boyfriend started shooting. Yes, the cops didn't, the theory is they didn't identify themselves. But there was good reason, ample reason for police to be surveilling Breonna Taylor's apartment. And that case is very complicated. I don't think it had, by the way, I don't think it had anything to do with race, which is why I brought it up. Nothing to do with race. Now, if you want to say police brutality and no-knock warrants, but that's not, I just get the sense that people are putting names on helmets. They don't even know anything about these cases. Nothing. Not even the beginning of the facts.
If Breonna Taylor were white, it would have made a local news. So of course it's about race. Of course it's about race. It's not about no-knock warrants. Come on, Jeff. You know, it's about the fact that a black girl got killed by police in a raid. And I mean, how big were the riots? Not big enough, actually, because that happened in March and they had to bring it back and then they recycle it. Look, people are tired of this. You know, they're tired of this. You know, BLM is a Marxist organization that wants to tear down the family. That's an anti-religion, anti-nuclear family. And corporate America has embraced them and donated hundreds of millions of dollars to them. And ordinary people at the football game are pissed off and they're booing. And they're going to, if the Cardinals do anything BLM when there's people there, they're going to boo.
I just feel like.
I think he's right. Hang on. We're coming back with more. Hang on, Jane. Hold your thoughts. We're coming back here. We got a break because I'm way late on this one. 2:17 at the Voice of St. Louis. It's the Reardon Roundtable for a Friday afternoon. Much more to come.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. 2:21, Reardon Roundtable for a Friday afternoon. Bob Woodward, he of Woodward and Bernstein fame, he's got a new book out called Rage, coming out next week. It's going to be on 60 Minutes, all the talk shows, and the audio that was released this week seemed to indicate that the president downplayed the coronavirus early on. There's some conflicting messaging that had gone on. He was asked by Jonathan Carl, ABC News last night, about this.
Thank you, Mr. President. Why did you lie to the American people, and why should we trust what you have to say
such
now?
A terrible question, and the phraseology, I didn't lie. What I said is we have to be calm, we can't be panicked. And your question, the way you phrase that is such a disgrace. It's a disgrace to ABC Television Network, it's a disgrace to your employer, and that's the answer. Are you ready? Because
I didn't. Than the flu, and then you went out and told the American public that this was just like the flu.
We've had flu years.
You told everybody else something else.
No, and five times, right? Five times. You ever hear the expression five times? We've had flu years where we lost 100,000 people. The flu is a very serious problem for this country also, and we've been losing them. Scott, what kind of a number have we lost over the years with flus? Into the hundreds of thousands?
Well, I mean, the last 5 years have been something like 35,000 to 80,000 per year, every year, even with antiviral drugs and even with
flu is a very serious problem also. But just so you...
This is worse than the most deadlier than the most strenuous flu.
Okay.
And then you went out and said it's just like the flu.
What I went out and said is very simple. Listen, what I went out and said is very simple. I want to show a level of confidence, and I want to show strength as a leader, and I want to show that our country is going to be fine one way or the other.
All right, John, I'll start with you on this one. How damaging to the president is this one? Does his explanation fly? Did he mislead the American people when it comes to the severity and the level of danger posed by the coronavirus?
This is just this weekend's media grab. The book's out. We started the week with the Atlantic Monthly talking about how Trump didn't want to go see loser dead ex-military people. That was refuted. You got Cohen's books kind of flirting in and out, you know, every couple of days, some wild quote from that book. And I've got this stupid book, Rage, about it. Look, what would the book have been about for Winston Churchill? Oh, my God. You saw, you know, the Churchill biopic a couple of years ago. Can you imagine if Churchill came out and said, oh, we're just about done here. We're cooked. I mean, the president's answer is, when you're the leader of the country, you know everything about everything. And the last thing you want to do is panic the country. And it was ironic. The whole thing is the people that were telling him it was all this deadly thing and 5% infection rates and young people are going to die from it. They were totally freaking wrong. You know, so look, you'll come back next weekend, Mark, on next Friday's roundtable. There'll be some other manufactured controversy. Somebody have a book or some article. And what are we, 52 days out? So, you know. Six more weeks of this.
This isn't
I know that Jeff Smith is chomping at the bit. Hang on, Jane. Let me let Jeff get in here and respond to that, because obviously you're going to have a bit of a different perspective, Mr. Smith.
I do have a different perspective, Mark. You know, for the president to claim that he did this because he didn't want anyone to panic. The president spends his whole life stoking panic. That's what his whole Twitter feed is. It's panic before the 2018 election about the immigrant caravan, which mysteriously disappeared right after the election, about Antifa mobs, about low-income housing, and Cory Booker leading an effort to invade the suburbs with low-income housing. That's what he does, is get people riled up. So he has no credibility when he says, well, I was doing it because I didn't want anyone to panic. I think we all know, if we're honest about it, why he was doing it. He had one thing that he was going to run for re-election on. He had a great economy. He did at the start of February. And he didn't want to scare people in a way that they stopped spending money, stopped going out, that dramatically hurt the stock market and the economy. And I get it, but it's disingenuous to pretend that he had other motives when the other purported motives are in such sharp juxtaposition with his entire demeanor that we've gotten to see for 5 years.
All right. Duker.
I mean, to call this manufactured when you're using his own words is comical. I mean, that's nothing but gaslighting. I mean, that's like the sky is not blue. It's a joke, okay? He said it. He lied. He said it was worse than the flu, and then he went out and said it was the flu. Do I think it's going to affect any voters? No, because the Trump people are going to deny, and, you know, everybody else is going to say this is he just lies, and we already know that. What I am concerned about is, how long did Bob Woodward sit on that? How long did he sit on that statement? And I mean, I think if people would have heard that right away,
6 months.
It might have made a difference. And so I'm a little frustrated that don't claim that you're all reporting in the public interest when you sat on this. That would have been good information to have early on. So that maybe some of this nonsense that he was peddling, we could have, you know, disabused
but
people
here,
of that a
here's
long
one
time
of the I think this is a fair question. So where would your side, Jeff, you can weigh in here, where would you like the president to have intervened sooner than he did? And what was he doing that Dr. Fauci, did he do anything that Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx, and the others told him to do? There's no indication. In fact, Dr. Fauci sort of defended him on that here in the last couple of days. So I understand. I do think, look, I have to call it like I see it. And I understand what he's saying about panic, but he was sending conflicting messages. I didn't like when he compared to the flu. I like it less now because I now know that he knew it was worse than the flu. On the other hand, there's so much that happened at the end of February. That first call is February 7th. Nobody was talking about shutting the entire economy down. Do you not remember the reaction that we all had when the NBA canceled their season, the NCAA tournament canceled, and all this stuff went to hell that second week of March? Nobody thought Name someone, Joe Biden or anyone else on the Democratic side, that thought we should shut the entire country down to save lives at that time. Who was saying that? Can you point me in the direction of one person, either Democrat or Republican? Because I can tell you Bill de Blasio was telling people to go out and dine. Nancy Pelosi was telling people to go to Chinatown. You know, Andrew Cuomo was letting people go into nursing homes. So there's a lot of culpability here. You want to talk about the number of people that have died? Let's talk about New York and the East Coast and all the mistakes that were made there.
So, well, first of all, the president had information that none of us had. So to act like everybody else should have been on top of this is a joke. He is the president. He had more information than everyone else, and he specifically lied about it. What he should have done is got testing out faster. But he drug his feet and drug his feet, and we probably could have tamped this down a lot further with a lot further testing, and we couldn't even get PPE for our first responders. We all remember what that was like, and he didn't do crap. There was a lot he could have done that may have ameliorated this sum. Is it hard to prove exactly how many lives would have been saved if he not had acted like a fool? No, nobody's going to be able to point to a number. But the bottom line is, this guy still wants to fight testing. It's mind-boggling to me. Why? We should be at the point at this point with our country and our ability to innovate that you walk into a place, you walk into a football game, and you get tested. Your saliva gets tested, yeah, whatever.
I don't disagree with that. I think we do need to focus on testing, but hang on, hold your thoughts, because I got to get to a break here. We got the news coming up. We'll come back. We still have much more to go here on the Reardon Roundtable this afternoon.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX.
Here we go. Welcome back. This is the third segment. Was never really good at math. Jane Duker, former state senators John Lamping, Jeff Smith, all on the panel. Let's kind of talk, Jane. I'll start with you on this one, just with the youth sports and where we are right now. A lot of parents still, you know, simmering underneath the surface, not happy with Dr. Page and some of the restrictions. On the one hand, you have seemingly some movement in a positive direction for parents like me who have younger kids who might want them back in school. There seems to be an indication that the school districts are moving toward that for at least kindergarten through maybe third grade. But the parents of the high school kids and the kids that are cooped up and they can't do anything, and Jane, you're one of those parents right now, not happy at all that they will not be able to compete. You have college football right now is going to get off the ground. You have the NFL. You have Major League Baseball. You can't send kids to school, though, or have them compete in sports.
I mean, I still go back to the fact that when you had the sports people get together and show everything they had been doing to keep it kind of a closed system, and doing everything in their power, more than you know, other people do to contain the virus, and they just can't seem to get through to Dr. Pander. And I mean, it seems like they bear the brunt of all the coronavirus. Every time, it's always the go-to to go after, you know, the high school sports. And you know, he's lost a lot of credibility because most of what he does is for a political reason. These people really frustrated him during the election. A lot of people think it's vindictive. There's been a lot of credibility issues on what he has done, whether it corresponds with the data. The task force, really, they used to back him up on everything he says. Now they're not backing him up anymore. I think that that people are angry and they're going to protest. And now he gets to feel what that's like and have people who are angry, you know, screaming at him and yelling at him. And, I think kids are going to get together. I have a high schooler. Telling kids that age that they are going to have no contact with one another is not, it's not reasonable. It's not, you know, you have to tailor the restrictions to an outcome. And so you don't let them play sports. You don't get them outside, get them doing exercise. They're going to find ways to get together.
Right.
And
absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Pick your poison. Do it in a controlled environment, or at least more controlled, or, you know, it's Lord of the Flies out there. And basically he's, you know, saying that we're just going to keep these kids shut down and it's not going to work.
I want to play something from Dr. Fauci and Jeff and John. Have you react to sort of more general feelings about where we are with COVID right now. You know, mid-September as we head into the fall, this is the period that we've been talking about, you know, as far as a second or third, whatever wave it might be. Now you have, you know, I hear a lot of ads right now and public service announcements for your flu shot, for your regular flu shot. So we know there's going to be complications there. I had a pretty bad virus 3 weeks ago that was not COVID, my wife and I, but it was pretty bad. So now you have more, in theory, the weather's going to be cooling off. You have more people indoors. Here's Dr. Fauci.
I just think we need to hunker down and get through this fall and winter because it's not going to be easy. We know every time we restrict, we lift restrictions, we get a blip. I mean, it's whack-a-mole.
John, it's whack-a-mole. I mean, to a certain extent, he's right because we keep getting some relief, but I don't have a lot of confidence that we're going to head into the next few months and be in a very good place in this country from a variety of perspectives, but I'm speaking of COVID right now.
This is the same Fauci that in April said it was okay to go on a Tinder date. Okay, so Fauci's credibility is what Fauci's credibility is. I think it's interesting where the president uses them to validate, you know, the early discussion in terms of what he knew or didn't know, the public should know. This form of government, the overbearing nature of government during this process, and I think in St. Louis County in particular, and the school districts. Now, I'll remind everybody, the Fort Zumwalt School in St. Charles County, never, they're 5 days a week, everybody's at school, you know? So there's a way, there's an approach to this that allows for a government to figure out a way to make it work best, and there's one that's an overbearing approach. I mean, shutting down businesses, shutting down schools. It's specific to St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and other Democratic counties and states, cities around the country. I'm sure you all saw the head of LA County School said the school is going to be closed until the election at the very least. So this is politicized. I don't know. I don't understand the politics of what Sam's doing. I mean, Jane's a Democrat. Sam's a Democrat. It's all Democrats in charge. All my Republican friends in St. Louis County don't know what to do because they're getting shut out by Democrats. So, you know, it's ridiculous. It's stupid, but it's happening, and they're going to do it the rest of the year. And
yeah, well, one thing that doesn't make sense to me, like Lindbergh is already opening it up to fourth and fifth grade. I sent an email with a pretty harsh tone to Dr. Miles in the Rockwood District this week that said, look, what is the holdup? What are you waiting for? In fact, the numbers from Dr. Page clearly indicate for the younger kids it's safe. They have no announcements. They're not keeping, you know, you get these generic emails every once in a while. And I do have it on good authority that there's some planning going on right now to get these kids back. But let's do it. What is the holdup? Let's have it take place right now. Jeff Smith.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any profound thoughts except to say that, you know, the quote from the clip that you played earlier, it was exactly right. When we loosen up, we see spikes. When we tighten up, we see it go down. You see that? That's one consistent thing across the country. I think it's just a massive collective failure. I think first of leadership, as we've talked about, you know, ad nauseum here, when you have a president dismissing it glibly, saying, oh, it's going to go away. There's 15 cases. It'll be down to zero. That contributes, especially in this hyper-polarized political climate, to 40% of the country thinking we have nothing to worry about. And if 40% of the country is not willing to sacrifice in small ways like wearing masks, then you're not going to be able to get something under control in a country of 320 million.
I think you're absolutely right about that. And that's part of the difficulty. I mean, the advice from Dr. Fauci seems to be, look, we got to just stay inside our homes for the next few months and get this under control. We don't have the willingness to do that. I don't think we have the economic ability to do that right now. So I don't even know what the end game is. But hang on, panel. We have one more segment to go here. We'll talk a little bit about the Cardinals and some other topics as we get into the final segment here in just a couple of minutes. And on that topic of the Cardinals, John Rooney, who usually joins us Tuesday, Thursday. There were two games yesterday. Jane, he's going to join us at 3:07. His thoughts on the doubleheader yesterday and heading into the weekend.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX.
Well, man, I miss the good old days when a couple years ago we were talking about whether or not Senator McCaskill was going to win re-election. Josh Hawley was going to be the next senator. Of course, he is. He has long been the official constitutional law expert of the Mark Reardon Show, going back many, many years. And the president must be aware of this because he said this a couple of days ago.
Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri.
So he made the short list, John Lamping, for SCOTUS, the president making an announcement. Ted Cruz is on that list as well. Senator Hawley coming out with a statement saying he's not interested. He wants to be senator and the official constitutional law expert of the Mark Reardon Show, and that's good enough for him. Your response, John Lamping.
Just when you thought that Claire McCaskill and Jane Duker and Jeff Smith and all the other Missouri Democrats couldn't be more triggered by Josh Hawley, that there's nothing else short of him running for president in 24, president drops his bomb this week. I can hear the heads exploding all across the state, all the Missouri Democrats who hate Josh Hawley with a passion. I mean, what a phenomenal thing. Quite frankly, I think the whole list is great. I think Josh should be great. I think the interesting part of that list is for the first time, you've got people on that list who are, will, if they are nominated in Trump's second term, they will actually testify in front of Congress that they are against Roe v. Wade. I think that was a big part of that list. And those names on that list, especially Cruz, I think Hawley and some of the others. And I think that's what's important. As far as galvanizing the evangelical vote in 2016, that list was the single most important thing that he did. And I think there's a reason why that list got expanded this time.
Yeah. Well, Jeff Smith, you know politics. I think you might agree with that was a significant part of the campaign. I think a lot of people maybe, you know, just on that issue alone held their nose and voted for Donald Trump. So this was obviously political. There's no doubt.
Sure. Sure. I mean, you know, I talk to a lot of Missouri Republicans, several of whom are evangelical Christians for whom judicial appointments are a really big issue. And several of them have said to me, hey, you know, look, I find Trump a loathsome character, but he kept his word in terms of the people he appointed to the federal judiciary. And so I'll vote for him again, despite my feelings about his style. So, you know, it was sort of like him replaying the greatest hits from 4 years ago, hoping that it works for him again. We'll see if it does. The one thing I will give President Trump credit for is that he has clearly united the 100 U.S. senators by doing this. And that's not easy to do. You know, obviously Senator Cotton, Senator Hawley, and Senator Cruz were happy to be on the list, but no one was happier about the prospect of getting rid of them out of the Senate than the other 97 senators. I can assure you of that.
that was a uniter. I mean, if you call a constitutional expert somebody who has had one case, that basically encapsulates what's wrong with the world. I've had like 100 more constitutional cases than Josh Hawley. So yeah, it does crack me up when people.
Did you clerk for Justice Roberts as well? I was unaware of your tenure with, you know, Clarence Thomas. Or who did you clerk with? I can't remember, Jane.
No, a constitutional expert is somebody who actually had cases, had clients. The guy had one case where he wasn't even the lead lawyer. He wrote a brief before the U.S. Supreme Court. Well, I've written 8 briefs before.
You can't get over this election. You're still stuck on the election from 2 years ago, aren't you?
Hey, the fact that politically he can do whatever, but I mean, to say that he's an expert in constitutional law is like saying I'm a supermodel. I mean, it's a joke. It's patently false and ridiculous. And so, it does offend people who actually practice law that he is treated like a lawyer because he really wasn't even a lawyer. So, yeah.
All right, whatever. You got that in there. That's ridiculous. Let's talk about something that was sad, but he was treasured here in St. Louis. I didn't know Lou Brock. I was honored when the first time I introduced myself to him at a golf tournament, he knew who I was because he was a Cam Wex listener, and he kind of intimidated me, to tell you the truth. But my friend Dan O'Neill sent this over. You know, we've had a lot of stories about Lou that have been shared this week and great, great memories in Cardinal Nation. Dan said this. This is really, when you think about this, and I think most of us here are old enough to remember some of these moments from the 70s with Lou Brock. Of his 938 career steals, Brock swiped 578 of those after he turned 30 years old. He had 260 of those after turning 35, midway through 1974. That in and of itself is remarkable. Remarkable athlete, remarkable person, remarkable, you know, just institution here in St. Louis. And Lou Brock will definitely be missed by Cardinal Nation.
I still have a Brock umbrella. I have my Brock umbrella that I got when I was a kid. And because he was always, I mean, I've gotten autographs from him. He was one of the nicest men, just a prince. Everybody loved him. He was kind. He was wonderful. He was, they're just, you know, you can't say a negative word about the guy. And I don't know. It just makes me proud to be a St. Louisan and a Cardinal fan, because that's the kind of, not base, just baseball players, but character, people, you know, men of substance. And he was just a wonderful man. And so he was great, and he will be missed.
He lived across the street from where I went to elementary school. His son went to the same elementary school as me. And, you know, and his son still lives in that same house. And that's the kind of unpretentious family they are. He used to go to his son's high school football games, and we used to see him up there. And, you know, he didn't act like he was anybody special. He just, you know, talked to everybody. And, you know, one of the things that I love watching now, do you guys ever watch these clips of LeBron coaching his son? You know, I'm kind of a sucker for that stuff. And Lou Brock had the same just totally unpretentious way about him that we wish more, you know, celebrities had, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the Cardinals right now, go ahead, John, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I was born in 62. And so I grew up watching him. My grandfather and I, we'd go to numerous games, and we were a left field bleacher. That's where we sat, you know, left field bleachers because of Brock. You know, back in, you know, 69, 70, 71, 72, when I was still a little boy. And it just galvanized the crowd. And it was just such a great advocate for the Cardinals in the town. It's really good.
Well, the Cincinnati Reds are in town. Adam Wainwright on the mound tonight. John Rooney's going to join us here in just a couple of minutes with a preview of that matchup and the weekend. The Cardinals currently in second place in the Central and would make the playoffs, because the first two teams in the division will finish in a way that sends them to the postseason. But we got 2 weeks of really intense baseball. They had the day off yesterday. There, unless there's a rain out, and that makes things even more complicated, no more days off until the end of the season for the St. Louis Cardinals. Jane, you're going to hang with me. We're going to talk a little bit about baseball. And our buddy, you know our buddy Alex Rich from our sales department. He was in Kansas City last night. He was one of the fans in Kansas City at Arrowhead, so he'll share that perspective. Senator Smith and Lapping, thank you so much for coming on here. Jeff, you got the kiddos in the Zoom picture. You should have put them online here this afternoon. They probably would have provided some insight, sometimes wiser than the adults, I think. But thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you guys too.
We'll see you guys. Take care. Second hour coming up on KMOX. Hang in there.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.